Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House candidates differ on minimum wage and living wage. Moscow school district officials to consider returning to in-person classes soon. And we'll have an interview with Latah County Commission candidate incumbent Democrat Tom Lamar. That's all coming up on the KRFP Evening Report and more. The Idaho Health Department reports 673 new confirmed and probable coronavirus cases in Idaho today as the daily increase in cases creeps towards the record set in July of 747 cases in one day. There were three new deaths reported today in Idaho from coronavirus, bringing the total to 503, the total number of cases of coronavirus in Idaho since the pandemic began is 46,426. The Washington Labor and Industries Department has fined 11 businesses statewide for violating the state's mask mandates. The department has looked at 4,200 mask order violation complaints since July. Department spokesperson Tim Church said most of the retailers, restaurants, and other businesses complied with Governor Inslee's mask order once labor and industries officials explained the situation. According to the spokesman review, labor and industries assistant director Ann Soiza wrote in a news release, wearing masks helps protect workers and others by reducing exposure to the virus in our communities so we can reduce fatalities and the impact to our healthcare system. Our goal is to get employees to comply with mask requirements through education and assistance, but if that doesn't work, they can be cited and fined. Labor and Industries fined 7 Spokane area businesses for mask violations. Viking Sewing Center in Spokane Valley, Zips Drive-In in Spokane Valley, and in Ritzville, Penn Hallerick's True Value in Moses Lake, Calico Kitchen in Spokane, and American Tire Depot in Spokane. Moscow School District Superintendent Greg Bailey says school district officials are going to consider allowing students to return to in-person instruction early next month. Bailey made the pitch for discontinuing the current hybrid model and returning to in-person classes during an online chat yesterday. Bailey presented the case to parents and teachers in separate meetings yesterday, telling the groups the action is really just a goal and not a certainty. The current AABB hybrid model covers a combined system with two groups of students under the labels A and B, in which students in the two groups attend in-person classes on different days, with the A group attending classes in person Mondays and Tuesdays and the B group on Thursdays and Fridays. All students stay home for online classes on days when they don't go to the school building. All students stay at home on Wednesdays while workers sanitize district buildings. Bailey said students who had signed up for online-only classes would continue learning that way until the end of the semester if the district goes to in-person classes. Bailey said if the school board decides to move to in-person instruction, students would have classes 4 days per week. He said, but rather than having the A groups and the B groups, we would bring them together. Right now, we'd probably be looking at Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, so they'd only have 1 day out of school rather than 3 days. Teachers Union co-president Joanne Riley said during the online meeting, she is uncertain how teachers feel right now because it is early in the semester. Riley said many educators and parents are expressing anxiety over the safety of students, teachers, staff, and the community at large. Riley said there are also logistical concerns over reintegrating students in person and adding more online students to our system. However, it is too soon in the information gathering process to fully comment on the opinions of teachers right now. pediatric medical director Summer Day said moving to in-person instruction would ignore possible future outbreaks of the COVID-19 pandemic in the community. Day noted the rise in cases among college students and said she would feel more at ease observing trends for a few more weeks before considering returning to face-to-face instruction. Day said, "We are actually in the critical risk for numbers in the last week and the week before. We were in the moderate risk category, so although the whole county level is considered low risk because we don't have any hospital stays, we are at the critical level just in the last week, so I'm personally a little reluctant, and I think the medical community would be about a November 4th opening." Bailey said the district will consult with all stakeholders before acting. He said it's prudent to begin asking pertinent questions as the end of the semester approaches. Bailey said, "We'll do a survey. I think that's really needed on this one. I want to get everyone's voice on this, not just the loudest. The board will make that decision. I'm just saying this is a goal that we have because I don't think anyone really feels like we can continue this through the entire pandemic. This could be 2 years." Republican and Democratic Idaho House candidates most clearly disagreed on the need for a minimum wage during last night's Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. Here's House Seat 5A candidate Republican Brandon Mitchell of Moscow, followed by his opponent, Democrat Dulce Kirsting Lark of Moscow.
This is a good question. It has been, it's been a big topic across the United States in a lot of different states. As a small business owner, one of the things that I've found is every time, because I've got stores in Idaho, I've got stores in Washington, I've got stores in Oregon. And what happens is that minimum wage continues to grow up, like in my Washington stores, I lose productivity. Because everyone knows they make the same. It's just easy for them to just, they're automatically making $13.50 an hour. And then, it doesn't give me the option to take care of those that are doing a better job, that pay for performance. The way that I kind of do my structure because of the minimum wage, the way that it is that they end up on a bonus program to where they get a bonus for doing a much better job. And then those that aren't performing as well don't get that portion of the bonus. I think minimum wage was designed to give people a start, to give people young kids especially. When you look at the McDonald's employees that they, you know, they talk about the McDonald's employees. Well, most of those kids are still living at home, and we keep on pushing the minimum wage up for them so they keep on making more money living at home rent free. I don't support a minimum wage increase. I think the minimum wage stifles wages, and I think that it actually harms people more than it actually helps.
Thank you. Ms. Kirsten Lark.
So, I would say I support a living wage, and ultimately a living wage is not the same as a minimum wage. And if you want some really good information about this, the League of Women Voters did a study on the living wage and a minimum wage, and you can find a lot of information about that on the League of Women Voters page. They have a position statement. I kept thinking, who gets paid minimum wage? Because I know a lot of people who have started jobs here in Moscow in particular, because we live in a border community. I think some of our starting wages are pushed up because we live alongside a state that already has a higher minimum wage. But it turns out there are 16,000 Idahoans, roughly, that make $7.25 an hour. That was a figure I found from 2017. And in 2018, another 58,000 made less than $8.25 an hour. So it's not an insignificant amount, and I don't think we can chalk it up simply to high schoolers. I think that's too many people in the workforce to say it's just high schoolers who don't have any other living expenses. When I say that I believe we need to be paying people at least a living wage, there are real metrics out there to understand it. Livingwage.mit.edu is a really good place. It's got a whole bunch of data aggregated. But in the state of Idaho, if you don't have any children, you're just an adult living on your own, you would need to make $11.04 an hour to have a living wage. That is to not pay more than 30% of your income for housing. Because we I honestly believe, have an affordable housing crisis in the state of Idaho. Necessarily, I believe we need a higher living wage. So I believe, yes, we probably need to be considering increasing the minimum wage. And given that it hasn't increased in over a decade, I would say federally, we probably need to be considering a higher minimum wage.
That was Democratic House Seat 5A candidate Dulce Kirsting Lark, preceded by Republican Brandon Mitchell. The two are running for the seat now held by Republican Bill Gosling of Moscow, who is retiring. On the question of minimum wage, here's the two House Seat 5B candidates, incumbent Republican Carolyn Troy of Genesee, followed by Democrat Renee Love of Moscow.
No, I don't agree with increasing a minimum wage, or if we do, I think it should be set to the federal minimum wage and index. And we've had legislation that has tried to let municipalities set a minimum wage. And just imagine what that would do here in this region. If Moscow, which has high-paying jobs between the university and Schweitzer Engineering and the ability to go in and make a living over in Pullman, and somebody who's in Beauville or Deary, a business that's in Beauville or Deary, if Moscow set its own minimum wage, what would happen to those surrounding communities? It would be impossible for them to find anybody to work and keep their businesses afloat. So I think we need to be very careful on how we look at the minimum wage and what it is used for. It's not supposed to be a living wage. And we need to make every effort possible to get living wage jobs in this region. I think that means, you know, it was disappointing to me when the University of Idaho shut down their technology park, because the opportunities for spin-off companies out of the University of Idaho dried up. That's how Schweitzer Engineering started. He started in the technology park over at WSU. So we need to really be able to think about how can we attract living wage jobs into this region. We need to have better transportation systems. We need to get our airport working. We need to have better flight service, especially flights to Boise. And we need to be able to attract more businesses into this region, do value added on our wheat and garbanzo beans. Why are we shipping our garbs off to get processed someplace else? There's a lot of things that we could do to make sure we have living wages here, not just minimum wage.
Thank you. And Ms. Love?
So when you look at $7.25 an hour, that's $15,000 a year. And so I want to say that again, $7.25 an hour is $15,000 a year. And even though that is just the baseline, there are people that make only $7.25 an hour. And actually, the majority of minimum wage earners are adults over the age of 20. So you think about minimum wage and who is making minimum wage. I've heard at the door that, yeah, they're just high school students, and that's not the case. We have a high percentage of workers making minimum wage in Idaho. And to talk about our living wage, right now the average wage or the average salary in Idaho is about $45,000 a year. And that's $16,000 below the national average. So we're starting low and we're continuing to be low. And I want to use the same train of thought that Ms. Troy had where, you know, you go to these rural communities and they're going to be paying a lower wage than say Moscow, if Moscow were to raise its minimum wage. Well, I want to say that same analogy for Moscow versus Pullman. I mean, Pullman, just across the border, has better wages, and we actually do lose skilled workers to Washington State. And that makes it hard. When you look at skilled work in the state, 7,000 STEM jobs, and STEM jobs is science, technology, engineering, and math jobs, went unfilled last year in the state. And they actually pay twice what other jobs will pay in the state. And so we're not keeping skilled labor in the state. This goes back to career technical training. We're not even providing career technical training to help raise some of the skills. But even that, we just cannot turn our back on working Idahoans. We need to make sure that the baseline needs to go up. I'm in support of the legislature actually allowing communities to increase their minimum wages and do what's best for them. Right now that bill was not passed last year and it was voted against. And we need to make sure that you know, if we have a better minimum wage, we can support our economy better and have a more spendable income source. And so I'm seeing the stop sign, so I'll stop.
That was Democratic Idaho House Seat 5B candidate Renee Love, preceded by Republican incumbent Carolyn Troy. A third candidate in the race, James Hartley of the Constitution Party, did not attend the forum. You can hear a repeat of the forum, which was broadcast live on KRFP last night, Sunday at 5:30 p.m. The League of Women Voters abruptly canceled the second part of the candidates' forum, which was to include the candidates in the contested race for Latah County Commissioner, incumbent Democrat Tom Lamar, and Republican challenger Gabriel Wrench. Here's moderator Richard Seaman.
Beyond the control of the League of Women Voters, we will not have any further debate this evening. We don't have two candidates prepared to present on behalf of the county commission race. Thank you all for attending.
County Treasurer B.J. Swanson reported in a comment on a Facebook post, quote, Gabe Wrench refused to wear a mask at the League of Women Voters candidates forum tonight and was not allowed into the forum. The League has a policy of not hosting empty chair debates in which one of the candidates in a two-person race doesn't show up, so that part of the forum was canceled. The League also did not host the candidates for the District 5 Senate seat, in which incumbent Democrat David Nelson of Moscow is facing a challenge from Republican Dan Foreman of Moscow. That was also due to the League policy of not hosting empty chair debates. Although the League did not say which candidate did not want to attend last night, Foreman also was not present at a Moscow Chamber of Commerce forum last week in which Senator Nelson participated. Masks were required at that forum, which took place at the Schweitzer Engineering Labs Event Center in Pullman. The moderator, Paul Kimmel, read a statement from Foreman who said he would not attend because masks were required. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is supported by listeners like you and the Idaho Walk Bike Alliance, promoting active transportation as healthy, safe, and reliable for all Idahoans. More information is available at idahowalkbike.org. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.
And this is KRFP Moscow Pullman, the KRFP Evening Report. The unmasked antisocial distancing Christchurch flash Samsung, apparently publicized for only a day on Facebook, attracted more than 200 people to Friendship Square at 5 p.m. last night. Police observed the event but did not intervene. Scientists have been investigating the relationship between spreading COVID-19 and singing, yelling, and talking loudly, especially unmasked, since March, when a 2.5-hour choir practice attended by 61 people in Skagit County, Washington, resulted in 32 of the attendees with confirmed COVID-19 cases and 30 probable cases. Two of the attendees died. The Centers for Disease Control reported on the incident. The report was authored by 12 medical experts. It said transmission was likely facilitated by close proximity during the practice and augmented by the act of singing. The act of singing itself might have contributed to transmission through emission of aerosols, which is affected by loudness of vocalization. Certain persons, known as super emitters, who release more aerosol particles during speech than do their peers, might have contributed to this and previously reported COVID-19 super spreading events. These data demonstrate the high transmissibility of SARS-CoV-2 and the possibility of super emitters contributing to broad transmission in certain unique activities and circumstances. Earlier yesterday, the city of Moscow issued a press release urging people to stay away from the Christchurch singing event in Friendship Square due to the risk of COVID-19 spread. We now go to another in our series of candidate interviews. Today we have incumbent Latah County Commission candidate Tom Lamar, who is a Democrat. His opponent is Republican Gabriel Wrench. It's the only contested race in Latah County government. Commissioner Kathy LaFortune, a Democrat, is running unopposed, as are Democratic prosecuting attorney Bill Thompson and Republican Sheriff Richie Skiles, both incumbents. Republican County Commissioner Dave McGraw, the third county commissioner, has 2 years remaining in his term. So we now go to our interview with Democratic candidate Tom Lamar for Latah County Commissioner, recorded earlier this afternoon. What's the best argument for reelecting you as a Latah County Commissioner?
Okay. I am a collaborator in the work that I've done for the last 6 years as a Latah County Commissioner. Before that, I worked as a Moscow City Council member for 7.5 years. I collaborate with others, both within Latah County and with other governments and with other agencies and with businesses around the region. I am an advocate for the residents of Latah County and regularly work on the behalf of the people that live here. And I am constantly working hard to get things done. I promote Latah County to the world or to people wanting to grow their businesses here and to others who want to live here and call this home. We work well, I think, to make Latah County the very best it can be. And people all over the state of Idaho look up to Latah County as setting a really good example for how a county should be run.
And how well has the county been run in the last 4 years? I mean, budgeting, fair deployment of services, strategy, things like that.
Yeah, so I've been here with Latah County for the past 6 years, and three of those I've been the chair of the commission. So that means that all three of the county commissioners elect one person to be the chair, and I was elected chair by both a Republican majority and then a Democratic majority. So I think that goes to, you know, working well together with lots of different kinds of people. We also have six other elected officials that help with various management pieces of the county. And we work well as a team. We oftentimes refer to ourselves as Team Latah. It is working well. We budget very conservatively. We are making sure that we only are generating tax dollars as are needed to produce the services of the county for the people here. So the largest expense, of course, within Latah County from a department perspective is the sheriff's office. The largest sort of area of spending money is with salaries. So making sure that we have the very best people working for Latah County is what we need to do, and I think we do that quite well. So when I first arrived, Latah County was known as a training ground for police officers, and we would regularly lose people to other departments, maybe City of Moscow or Seattle or what have you. So I think we've been able to, make sure people want to stay at Latah County and continue to grow their professional work here.
Through better salaries, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We've had to, bring our salaries up to a more competitive level. So quite a few years ago, I mean, not in too distant future, but like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, salary studies were showing that we were, not within 20% of market value for salaries. So we made sure we're, having to pay people a living wage and making sure that we're keeping people employed here and not moving away to go somewhere else. So, of course, that means raising the budget in a few areas. And so there are a few years that we've raised it. There was a 1%, 2% raises. We've had some 3% raises. This year we were able to still provide some cost of living increases in the salary, just like 2%, but we were able to not increase the budget at all. So we had a 0% increase in the taxable portion, tax paid portion of the county budget.
And of course your opponent is saying that you guys have raised taxes too much.
Well, so it's not the, that kind of goes to a lack of understanding of what a commissioner does. So we do raise, we're authorized to raise the budget by 3% maximum, plus a factor for new growth. We don't directly raise taxes. What we do is we raise a portion of the budget. And there's a big difference between those two. There are a lot of other factors that increase people's property taxes. And a lot of those factors have to do with what the state of Idaho is doing. The state of Idaho, since 2016, has flattened the homeowners exemption. So they have not allowed the homeowners exemption to rise. And so that means that people who own their homes and live in those are paying an increasingly larger share percentage of property taxes because of that alone. So there's that. There's a circuit breaker that hasn't been risen in a while, and that's another problem. So there are a lot of areas that are causing people to pay more in property taxes because of what the state of Idaho is doing. The Latah County portion of your property taxes is about 24% of your property taxes. So as a county commissioner, I'm one-third of the body that makes decisions about the budget. When we increase a budget, it might increase a piece of what people are paying for that 24%. So it's a piece of a piece of a piece. The state of Idaho, when they don't fund education as they should be, in my opinion, the state of Idaho continues to underfund education. When they do that, they are putting the onus on all of the school districts all over the state of Idaho to float levies and bonds and so forth in order to raise the money they need to educate our children. And so we are seeing big increases. Of course, because voters are saying, yes, of course I want the kids in my school district to learn well, so I'm going to vote for the levy and the bond, and that's exactly what needs to happen. But it would be better if the state of Idaho were properly funding education. Another area is lacking is the state of Idaho. When we have an inmate in our jail from the state, a state inmate, they will reimburse us $75 a night for that state inmate. However, it costs us $105 roughly to house that inmate. So the other $30 is subsidized by your property taxes. So, you know, if they want us to do a better job of, you know, not requiring people to pay as much in property taxes, then the state of Idaho needs to fully pay their bill and not short their bill to the counties all over the state of Idaho. So the conditions with which the state provides for county commissioners to be able to fund our budgets ends up creating problems between property taxpayers and various counties.
What's the role of Latah County in the Palouse Basin Aquifers Committee's moves to find a new water source for the Palouse? I know they've just signed a contract with Alta, a scientific firm, and things are moving forward. What's the county's role in that?
Yeah, so there are two people that represent Latah County on the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee, and I'm one of them, and the other one is Paul Kimmel. And the two of us are the appointees by Latah County to sit on that board. The Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee, so the county role in that is really to attend and help direct the organization. And when we think about the long-term water supply for our region, the Palouse Basin makes up a fairly small portion of Latah County, but the most populated part of the county. So, like, the area including, like, Viola, Moscow, down to Genesee. So it's sort of this piece of the Palouse. We are doing an excellent job of water conservation between Moscow and Pullman and University of Idaho and Washington State University, but we could do a better job. And we are seeing it improving over time. And it's my opinion, actually, personally, that we could continue to do quite a bit more of water conservation and extend even further our ability to continue to just use our aquifer. But there is a process with which we are trying to plan for someday needing to use other sources of water. So there's been, for the last several years, some studies looking at lots of different options, about 30-some options, and those have been mostly narrowed down to maybe 4 different options of a possible alternative water supply that look at maybe, you know, water from the North Fork of the Palouse River or Snake or some potential damming or some potential diversion of water out of rivers at different times of the year. So the work with ALTA will help us work on that more, you know, get it to a more narrowed focus.
There's been a lot of armed right-wing organizing in rural America to maybe take away our democracy if the presidential election appears to be too close. Do you think this is happening in Latah County, and if so, to what extent?
I, like many people, are very concerned with a lot of the right-wing armed groups. There's a lot of stuff that we see all over the country, and I think we see that, you know, within our area too. I think mostly it's like it's coming from other places. You know, we saw the weird behavior by Chad Christensen from Amon, Idaho, that just came up and did that protest up here and tried to attract people to come, and, you know, it basically that organized activity messed up the farmers market that one day. We saw a protest the other day by, I think it was organized by Heather Scott, coming down from Bonner County area.
Yeah, Trump convoy.
And the Trump truck convoy with, you know, trucks with you know, train whistles on them, or I don't know, and flags and stuff. And I, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I think most of that is a show of frustration. Maybe I don't know. It does feel very threatening, but I don't know. Maybe it's the last dying throes of patriarchy, perhaps. It just seems to me to be unnecessary and silly, but I think I don't want to remove the fact that a lot of people feel very threatened by that behavior, and it's not good that people feel threatened, and it's not because they shouldn't feel threatened. It's because those people that are doing that shouldn't be threatening like that. I would like to think that we, as in our law enforcement agencies, will be able to detect when those threats are credible or possible. And, you know, I think, for example, it was a good idea that the city of Moscow last weekend put emergency vehicles in appropriate places to help prevent any problems from happening with the farmers market last weekend. I thought that was a good idea.
The North Central Idaho Health District has only released COVID-19 case numbers for Latah County, but hasn't divvied them up as far as the city of Moscow and the rest of Latah County. Is that a concern of yours? Do you want to know that those statistics?
Well, we're always asking. A lot of it is HIPAA rule violations, in that with numbers below a certain point, if you give too much information, then you're essentially identifying the people that are sick. And when you talk about small communities, and we've been asking to get the health department or the health district to report the numbers per zip code. But if the numbers are too low, then they start to identify, you know, people who are sick in the community, and then it becomes a problem with violating HIPAA, you know, per a person's privacy to their own health information, right? So that's the problem. So there's a balance between what information needs to get out to people so that you're protecting the public health, and what do you need to do to protect people's privacy. So that's the balance that we are, of course, required to follow. That's not, you know, it's like federal rules. It's not what, you know, the county can't just jump out ahead and say, well, we want to know this anyway, even though it's not. So at some point, we might start to be able to see numbers per zip code or per part of the county, but that's when the numbers are higher, ironically, because then you're protecting people more by not having too much information about an exact who that person might be.
Let me ask about the city of Moscow mask measure. Do you think it's needed more in the city than in the county, because the county does not have a mask ordinance?
Yeah. So an ability for a mask ordinance is limited. So public health rules, like an ordinance for masks or something like that, is allowed by state law, not at the county level, but at the city level. It's also allowed at the state level, and it's allowed, and there's an ability for orders to be issued by the public health district. So those are different. You can have a state law, you can have a city ordinance, or you can have an order issued by a public health district. And the public health district order can be issued countywide. So if the public health district said, Latah County, you need a countywide mask order, then that could happen. And in that case, it would be enforceable by, you know, the county sheriff, and would be encouraged by the county commissioners, right? So it's different allowances. We can't jump out ahead. Now we could go to the public health district and say, we want you to give us an order, but you don't. The county has a different ability to issue that kind of decision based on state law. So, you know, when we're county commissioners, we have to do what we can do within state law. We can't just kind of do what we want to do. We uphold the Constitution of the state of Idaho, and that's part of it. Now, some people think the mask order is unconstitutional, and that's silly. It's not unconstitutional. The city of Moscow can have a mask order and ordinance, and they do. And that's just the way it is. And if you don't like wearing a mask, you're part of everybody else that doesn't like wearing a mask. None of us like wearing a mask, but masks work, and it's really good that the city of Moscow has a mask ordinance, and I'm happy they do. And it's necessary in the city of Moscow, and it may not be necessary in other parts of Latah County. However, I think that the recommendation that everybody all over this area, all over Lake County, wear a mask when social distancing is not possible, when you're around other people, is absolutely a good idea. Even though it might not be required in other parts of Lake County, it needs to happen because it is has been demonstrated to be effective at helping to keep our neighbors safe. And in wherever we are in other parts of Lake County, we should be wearing masks when we cannot be socially distant. You know, being outside, being socially distant, wearing masks are all tools to help slow the virus. The most important thing is not whether or not there's a rule or a law. The most important thing is what do we need to do to keep each other safe and healthy and alive.
Now, there's been a lot of concern about your opponent. He co-organized at least one of the anti-masking rallies that could possibly become a super spreader event, and claims to be ignorant of masks working, but it really seems to us who know about science that he's telegraphing that he and his Christchurch supporters can essentially kill us with possibly super spreader events, sort of with impunity. We've noted, Doug Wilson, his cohort in Christchurch, in the sermon back in 2003, talking about his long-term plan to take over the city of Moscow, and referring to his father Jim Wilson's book, The Principles of Warfare, referring to the community as the enemy. And I was wondering if you would comment on this whole situation, because it seems like they're at the end run, or the COVID-19 crisis is sort of the end game for them.
Yeah. Well, it's quite frustrating. I agree. And I think they're losing a lot of credibility in the whole mask argument. They certainly are with people that I know that understand the science behind these recommendations. And I don't think it's a good demonstration of good leadership to encourage people to not wear masks and to share widely respiratory exhalations with each other in a public square. I stay away from those areas and want to make sure that I am very far away from people that are doing that. I think it's unfortunate that they're using a veil of religious devotion as a way to try to commit a public health endangerment of others.
That's incumbent Democrat Lake County Commissioner Tom Lamar speaking with KRFP this afternoon. His opponent is Republican Gabriel Wrench. They're running for the District 2 seat on the Lake County Commission. The districts are for candidate pools only. All Lake County voters can vote in all county commission races. The other election for county commissioner this year, Democratic incumbent Kathy LaFortune has no opponent. And for the third county commission seat, Republican Dave McGraw has 2 years remaining in his term. The winner in the race between Lamar and Wrench will serve a 2-year term on the county commission. Public health officials reported a new COVID-19 death in Lewis County yesterday, bringing the total number of coronavirus deaths in the county to 3. The North Central Idaho Health District reported 51 new coronavirus cases in the 5-county region yesterday. Lake County reported 26 new cases yesterday, and Nez Perce County reported 16 new cases. Lake County has had a total of 670 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began, with 2 hospitalizations and 0 deaths so far. Nez Perce County has had 508 cases since the pandemic began, with 25 deaths. Whitman County has had 15 new cases yesterday. bringing the county total to 1,427 cases since the pandemic began, with one death. And that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, partly cloudy, low 42, west winds 10 to 15 tonight, becoming light and variable after midnight, gusts up to 30. Sunny tomorrow, high 73, increasing clouds tomorrow night, low 46. 90% chance of rain Saturday, high 56, southwest winds 5 to 10, increasing to 10 to 15 in the afternoon with gusts up to 25, between a quarter and a half inch of rain possible. Saturday night, rain likely, 60% chance, mainly before midnight. Snow level 6,300 feet, lowering to 5,000 feet after midnight. Mostly cloudy, low 37, west winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 30. 30% chance of rain Sunday, mainly in the afternoon. Snow level 4,900 feet, rising to 5,400 feet in the afternoon. Partly sunny, high 54. Currently 68 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. KRFP is in a financial emergency because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're unable to have our major in-person fundraisers. We'd appreciate any donation you can give us. If you go to the KRFP.org website, there's a Patreon button where you can decide to donate a certain amount from your account every month automatically to KRFP. There's also a PayPal option. You can also underwrite programming to let our listeners know your business supports community radio, and you can also adopt a DJ. Also, we'll gladly accept any size checks via mail at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Coming up next, we'll have Talk Nation Radio, about a half hour late, and then that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, also about a half hour later than normal. Today's topic, militia groups caught plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan. We'll talk about the plot and the deeper roots of the militia as a part of the racist nature of police power in the U.S. And that's at 7 o'clock tonight. We're going to preempt appearing locally, a local music show or a show of bands that have appeared in the area locally this week, and it'll be back next week. At 8 o'clock, syndicated punk rock with Maximum Rock and Roll. At 9 o'clock, Dan's solo show, a KRFP-produced show now being produced from home. That goes to 11 o'clock, and live jam band music with The Ride at 11 o'clock. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
The Moscow League of Women Voters has issued a reminder that this Friday, October 9th, is the last day to pre-register to vote in Idaho. Latah County residents can register at the Latah County Auditor's Office at the courthouse. After Friday, those who want to register to vote in Idaho will need to show up at their polling place on November 3rd and register there. When registering to vote, you'll need proof you live at your current address, and you'll need to bring a picture ID or sign an affidavit affirming you are who you say you are.